Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season.
Now, very happy to welcome live to the show Sheffield United and Republic of Ireland international, of course, John Egan is with us. John, thanks for the time. Great to have you on the show.
No problem, how's things?
Yeah, very well. Here, come here. Congratulations, by the way, because you were announced FAI Senior International Player of the Year 2020. It was announced last month, but with COVID, no ceremony, no round of applause, no posing with the trophy, night out for the family. But that's a big achievement. I hope you're not going to brush that away and say you don't care about individual honours. That's a great thing to win.
Yeah, listen, huge honour. Especially being a proud Irishman, come from a proud family. You know, it's, you know, fantastic to be recognised, I suppose, and to win that award was very special.
Were you expecting it?
No, not at all. I just, you know, kind of, you don't really think about them things, you know, when you're a player and stuff. And just woke up one morning, seeing I had a message saying I got it. And then obviously it was on Twitter and stuff. So all my friends and stuff were texting me. So, yeah, it was, you know, a pleasant surprise.
Good man. To be fair, it would be a touch arrogant if you'd answered that question with yes.
I'm not Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo, so I don't think I can be thinking like that.
So, listen, I guess the point of the chat is to check in and see how the season's going, and obviously tomorrow week, hell of a big game. I was just glancing through a few different bits. The start of this year, you dislocated your toe, I saw, which is not the most important thing I'm going to chat to you about here, don't worry, but that doesn't sound like fun. Out for 8 weeks. I've never had the pleasure. What's that like?
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird one, really. I blocked the shot, played West Ham away, blocked the shot, and as soon as I blocked it, the follow-through kind of caught me, and I just knew, you know, I looked down, I knew there was something out of place in my foot. So the pain wasn't really sore. It was just kind of the sickly feeling of feeling like a bone or a joint or something is out of place. So it was a weird one. The stretcher came out and everything, so there was a... You know, people watching it from back home and stuff were very worried. But, you know, luckily for me, it wasn't a break. It was a dislocation and got away with one, really. Could have been a lot worse. So, you know, I only missed 5 or 6 games, had an operation and, you know, played the last 9-10 games of the season. Right. So it was good to be back.
So dislocation's better result than a break in that instance?
In some areas, yeah. I suppose in where I got it, I thought I might have broke my metatarsal or something, which is 3 or 4 months and would have been me for the season. But... luckily the doctor kind of pulled it back into place quick enough to make sure I didn't need a big operation or anything. So it was it was bittersweet, I suppose. Bad to get injured, but luckily enough it wasn't a bad one.
Yeah. Look away now, John, as I shove your dislocated toe back into its spot.
Yeah, one of them. Grit the teeth, get on with it.
I was just having a glance at your record. In fairness to you, you play a lot of games. You don't seem to get injured, or if you do, you play through the pain a little bit. So just to give people a sense of that, going right back to say League One days with Gillingham in 2015, 45 games in the league, these are just league games that year, League One with Gillingham, 36 games in 16, Brentford in the Championship 17, 34 games, Brentford in the Championship 2018, 33 games, and then Sheffield United 19 in the Championship, 44 games, Premier League in 20, 36 games, and then last year in the Premier League, 31 appearances, and that's with the toe, which we've discussed at length already. And so I looked in all competitions, you've your highest season was 52 matches all competitions. The lowest you've had any year is 34. That's pretty good, you know. Are you generally quite lucky with injury? Are you playing through pain a lot of the time? What's it like as a professional footballer in those terms?
Yeah, listen, you try and make yourself available for every game you can. You know, sometimes during the season you might have a niggle that, you know, you can get through without making it worse. So, you know, you kind of take a few painkillers and stuff. You might have a little flu or a bit of illness that you want to, you know, it would take a lot to kind of knock you out of the team, really. You don't want to give your place up and give someone else a chance to, you know, to do it. So I think kind of mentally is, in, from my head anyway, when I'm approaching games, you know, if I have something, you know, maybe a bit wrong with me, but I think I can play and do a good job, then, you know, I'd always try and play through it. You know, obviously I've been lucky enough that I've had, you know, a good run of games in each of those seasons. And, you know, it's important to try and look after your body off the field as well. So, you know, recovery, rest, you know, is a big part of playing it too.
How often would you be in the tunnel before a game, league game, and feeling 100%?
Not often. I suppose you could probably count in one or two hands, you know, how many times that's happened in my career. I've played over 300 games and, you know, a lot of it could be anything. You know, you play that many games, you could even just be exhausted, but, you know, you get on with it. You have your caffeine tablets, you might have a can of Red Bull or something. Anything to kind of get you into the zone and, you know, get you feeling alive and awake for games. But yeah, you're constantly kind of, you know, trying to manage your body, playing that many games, and kind of becomes a routine, really. You know, after the game, you have to eat well, you have to recover, get the right sleep, and, you know, not do too much away from football. That kind of takes your energy.
Championship is such a slog as well. With Damien Delaney on the show, and I remember him saying that the year he was promoted with Crystal Palace potentially extended his career, because in a perverse way, playing Premier League is less of a treadmill than the Championship by comparison. So you've experienced both. How would you compare the demands of Premier League football versus Championship, be that physically or in terms of the quality of the opposition, the whole experience? What's a season like, Premier League versus Championship, on the body, on the mind, everything?
I think they're both similar. Obviously, you've more league games than the Championship, a lot more midweek games. Premier League, you've a lot of kind of Saturday to Saturday, or, you know, you've a week's break between most games. So I suppose games wise, it's not as tough, but, you know, the demands are tougher because you're playing against better players and better teams, and, you know, you're probably doing a bit more running, and, you know, you're getting punished if you're playing against quality players, if you make mistakes. And I suppose mentally it's probably more demanding in the Premier League, but from a physical point of view, the Championship is, you know, it's non-stop. You know, if you win a game or you lose a game, it's quick to kind of forget about it because you have another game in 2 or 3 days. So listen, they're both challenging in both ways, but, you know, from a player's point of view, you just have to be looking forward to the next game all the time and doing everything you can to be ready for the team.
What would you miss about Premier League football?
You miss playing against the best teams in the world and, you know, going out and doing well. And, you know, the first year, especially when we went up, we were, you know, we were in the top six, top seven for most of the season. So we were, you know, gone from being promoted from the Championship to fighting for Europe. So, you know, the buzz that created, and we were obviously hit with COVID and, you know, the lockdown and having to do a season with no fans, which kind of went by. You kind of feel like you've lost out a bit as a player, playing in the biggest stages with no fans. So that was a bit annoying. But yeah, listen, the Championship nowadays as well is a huge league. You know, we went to Nottingham Forest last night, 25,000 plus at the game. You know, there's huge clubs in the Championship, and, you know, as long as you're playing football and trying to get results, you know, you feel blessed to be able to do this as your job.
You've gone over to the UK in your late teenage years and worked your way through the lower leagues and the Championship and promotion into the Premier League. So it's not like it suddenly clicked for you as an 18-year-old playing against superstars from that age. Did you have any kind of pinch-me moments in the Premier League where you're standing beside a certain player or you're in the tunnel against a certain team and you think, this is a bit surreal to be against this fella?
Because I kind of... You know, I made my Premier League debut at 26, so I had a lot of football played by then. Yeah. I played for Ireland. You know, I played a lot of Championship games, and kind of, you know, I was probably better off that I didn't make it when I was 18, because I remember being on the bench for Sunderland. I was 19, I think, against Man United, and, you know, I was in the tunnel, and yeah, Ferdinand, Rooney, Evra, all the big names, and I was kind of pinching myself thinking, yeah, you know, if I come on here and playing against these lads. But I think by the time, you know, I made my debut, I was, you know, more experienced, played a lot of games, and, you know, there was nerves for the first game, obviously coming up not knowing what to expect, but you know, we got off to such a good start that the nerves kind of went, and you were going out there on a level playing field. You know, we were putting it up to the best teams in the league, and I suppose it's only now when you look back on it, you think how well we did. And, you know, at the time, you're just out there to try and get a result. And it was a really good mindset to be in, that you weren't going there as a tourist to the big ground. You were going there to compete and try and get points.
John, what is it about the real top guys that separates them? Like, what is it about Salah? What is it about Aguero that makes them so unbelievable?
Quality and mentality. You know, these guys at the top, they've got fierce drive and fierce mentality to keep getting better. And, you know, you make a mistake against them, you get punished. They're masters of their craft. You can see that you don't get to the top without working hard. And, you know, they obviously do a lot of finishing, a lot of work and training to make them the players they are. And that's why, you know, sometimes you kind of, you don't appreciate it until you're kind of there and you're up against them. And, you know, you see how good some people really are.
So you mentioned you were playing last night. So I don't know if you saw any of Bruno Fernandes and Ronaldo last night.
I saw the goals. I only saw the goals, the highlights. Yeah.
Okay. So tomorrow week, big game, obviously. You gone? Sorry, I was just saying. Well, tomorrow week. Yeah. I mean, it's there's two for you. So, what was your experience of being up against that caliber, those two, for instance, in the Algarve? Because for a lot of the game, it was going very, very well, and Ronaldo was as quiet as you could hope to keep Ronaldo. And then, as is his habit, he seems to pop up and strike. So, what was the experience of playing against somebody of that caliber, for instance? What's your memory of trying to tackle him and keep him quiet?
Yeah, it's obviously tough. You know, they've a really good squad, you know, top players. And, you know, we went there with the belief that we could cause an upset. You know, all week in training, we were working on things. And I suppose the game didn't get off to the best start. We gave away a penalty, but, you know, Gavin made an unbelievable save. And I think we just grew in confidence from that. Mm. You know, we started executing the game plan really well. Took the lead just before halftime. And, you know, with a bit of luck, we might have gone two up in the second half and it would have been totally different. But, you know, as you said there, Ronaldo had other ideas, and, you know, at the very end of the game, he caught us twice. And, you know, sometimes you got to hold your hands up. There's quality players who can do things like that. And I think we gave a really good account of ourselves. You know, we went there with belief. You know, we played out of our skin, really played really well, and we're really unlucky not to get a result. So, you know, we're going to try and work hard and train next week to go out there and get a result next Thursday.
I saw you saying of the goal which you scored, and I'm sure that's an unbelievable moment, unbelievable thrill, that usually you'd go back post. Was it Shane Duffy said to you, you run front post this time and see what happens, just kind of on a whim?
Yeah, I think so, yeah, because usually going back post, nothing really gets over Duffy, so I thought there's no point in going back to the back. But yeah, he just said go near post this time. And I actually said to Andrew, I think Andrew was next to me, Andrew Mabamadeli, and I said, oh, go get yourself a debut goal. And then I ended up scoring. He ran over and he said, geez, you go get yourself a goal, will you? So it was quite funny. But no, it was a brilliant moment. Like, took the lead just on half time, and we felt like we were going into the game as well. So it's great for confidence. It's just unfortunate we didn't get a result to go with it, to be honest. You know, we really felt like we played well enough to get a result that night. And it was heartbreaking after.
I can imagine. Was I reading your mum was in the crowd?
Yeah, it was mad, really. Like, I literally scored, started running towards Jamie, and then I just looked to the right to see, you know, look into the fans, maybe give the Portugal fans a shush. But I just seen my mum. My mum was just up there waving her hands, like, screaming. So I just stopped and just started screaming at her. It was funny.
Wow.
It
was, what a moment.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable moment. Yeah, probably the best moment I've had in a football pitch, to be fair.
Oh, God, I'd say by a distance. Because your mum's a League of Ireland medal, so she knows her stuff. She's watching you with a critical eye.
Oh yeah, very critical. You know, when we, not that game, but when we tend to lose games, you know, I wouldn't be ringing her straight after the game because I wouldn't want to be listening to what she has to say. But no, she loves it. She's really proud, and you know, every time I put on the Ireland shirt, you know, she's so proud, and you know, she loves it, and she comes to all the games she can, so it's good.
And so, when you're heading off to England as a teenager, is she keen for you to go? Is she saying, look, you gotta, you know, go for this? If she's big into her football.
To be honest, no, she was kind of keen on me staying, you know, do the leaving cert and, you know, kind of stick around, you know, see, try go after that. But kind of had it in my head as soon as I was offered a contract, I wanted to go, and, you know, my dad, you know, really wanted me to go as well. So it was a tough decision. But, you know, it was too good of an opportunity to turn down at the time. And, you know, I think once she sorted out the education side of things with Sunderland, that, you know, I'd still get my education. You know, that was kind of the only hurdle I had to clear to get her on side. So, no, she was obviously sad to see me go, but she, you know, she knew that I was going after something that I really wanted to.
And was Dad saying stay as well, or did he think maybe take a chance?
No, he was. He just said to me, "Look, I believe you're good enough to go. I believe you're good enough to make it over there. So, you know, go over, work hard, and, you know, I'll back you 100%." He said, because I was obviously toying with the idea of playing Gaelic football and hurling, and he kind of basically said to me, "Look, I've won everything in Gaelic football and stuff, and, you know, you kind of don't really have anything to show for it in a way. Like, you've got memories and medals and stuff, but," he said, "you've got an opportunity to go over there, and, you know, it's your living, you're playing a sport you love to play. And, you know," he said, "if I had the opportunity, I'd go." So I suppose listening to my dad, who is my hero and, you know, one of my best friends, really, saying that, it was, you know, kind of put my mind at ease.
Wow. That's some belief to having your son, isn't it? That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was good.
Most parents, I'd say, are saying, "Oh, look, geez, it's a one in a million chance. Are you sure?" You know, I mean, to say, "God, you're good enough, go for it." Amazing.
That's the thing, yeah. Listen, it's the success rate is really low, but I suppose if you do have that belief in yourself, and, you know, if you want to do it, I suppose the decision was left up to me, really. Yeah. If you want to do it, do it. Like, I was mature enough. I was 16 going on 17. Like, you know, I felt like I had a mature head on me for that age. You know, I'd gone over on trial 5 or 6 times to different clubs, and, you know, I kind of seen the level myself, and, you know, I knew I'd work as hard, if not harder than anyone over there to do it. So I knew if I had that side right, and that I had a good chance.
You talked there about, you know, your dad being your best friend, and, you know, that kind of advice, and I can only imagine the effect his passing has on you and the family. I must say, it crossed my mind watching you scoring the goal on those great nights, like the big highlights, if it's not too personal a question, would you feel his loss more acutely? Would you be thinking of him on the flight home, God, thinking, geez, you know, moment like that? Or maybe it's a Tuesday morning more so when you think of it, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Like, it's funny, like, because the biggest highs, you know, sometimes you think of them as lows when you think like that. Like, you know, I'd be speaking to my family after the game, and, you know, the first thing I'd say is, "Oh, imagine Dad was there." Like, you know what I mean? You just kind of say it, just comes out.
Yeah.
And especially in Portugal, like in the Algarve, because we used to go there, like, to Alvor, we went there a lot as kids, like maybe once every summer. Myself, my mum, my dad, my sister, and, you know, myself and my dad would go off playing football wherever we could find a pitch, or a sand pitch or a gravel pitch. And, you know, to score my first Ireland goal there then even meant more, because, you know, it was all I was thinking of when we actually flew there. And, you know, instead of the game being on in Lisbon, it was on in the Algarve. And, you know, it was crazy. You know, that's good. They're the nights when you feel like he's looking down on you. You know, and it's a strange feeling, but it was very special.
Yeah, no, I can imagine, because often, you know, it's on those special days, someone's wedding day or graduation, or, well, not everyone scores for Ireland, but they're the days that are, you think you used the word bittersweet.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I suppose, like everything, you know, you're always thinking, what if, but, you know, I'm lucky enough to have him as a dad, and, you know, I was extremely lucky to have my mum in the crowd that night. You know, so I suppose when you look at it that way, you know, it's just a feeling of kind of being a bit blessed, and, you know, as long as, you know, people are healthy around you, that's the main thing.
Yeah. So she had done well to travel over, I think. I don't know how many Irish fans were in the stadium. I take it she'll be there tomorrow week. She gets to her fair share of games, does she?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. A big crowd up from Cork and Kerry tomorrow week, all dying to go to the game. So, yeah, listen, hopefully we can put on a really good performance.
There's a text in, because we mentioned you were coming on. It's funny, this text has come in 4 times. Does he support Kerry or Cork?
I knew that was coming.
Did you? Okay. It's a common question to you, I suppose.
Yeah, listen, growing up in my house, it was Kerry football, Kerry football, Kerry football. So naturally, you know, I was going to Munster finals wearing a Kerry jersey, going to All-Ireland semi-finals, All-Ireland finals, you know, being around the team after the finals. My dad would be going to the functions, I'd be there with him. So, you know, fanatic Kerry Gaelic football supporter all my life, given, you know, what my dad has done. My mum's a Kerry woman as well, so that's kind of what I've been brought up to be. On the other hand, living in Cork, you know, seeing the passion Cork people have for their football and hurling teams, you know, especially hurling, if they're fierce passion for the hurling down there, and they were very successful when I was growing up as well. So I'd ended up going to all the Cork games with my buddies, all the Cork hurling games. And you know, it's an easy one to say Kerry in the football and Cork in the hurling, but that is what I am. That is what I suppose Cork and Kerry, you could say. But listen, some of my friends, you know, they've broken into the Cork senior football and hurling teams. And,
right.
You know, I'll support them all the time. You know, I want them to do well. And I suppose if Kerry aren't going well in the football, then I'd probably turn into a Cork football fan. And
Fair enough.
If Cork fall off a cliff in the hurling and Kerry start, boom, and then I'll turn into a Kerry hurling fan.
Fair enough. Come here, Cork lads are taking over this Irish team, by the way.
Yeah, to be fair, it just shows the work they're doing down in the Cork School Boys League. You know, growing up, it was always really competitive. There was always some really good players, even my age, you know, that probably could have went across the water. Good club mate of mine, Damien Callan, he was in goal for my schoolboy team growing up. He's, you know, he was as good as any keeper I've seen in Ireland, you know, coming through them age groups. And, you know, he went down the Gaelic football and hurling paddies, played for Cork Hurlers now a number of years after playing for the footballers, and, you know, shows what an athlete he is. And I think Cork is just such a sporting county. You know, you got Gaelic football, hurling, you know, football, rugby, you know, basketball, they play everything down in Cork. And it's a really good environment to grow up in, because you end up just playing every sport, and you can kind of take bits from every sport.
Yeah, I can imagine. So the last two Irish performances were brilliant, I think is the only way you could describe them. Like, we really, it felt like a real step forward. I was going to say a pressure, that's not the right word, or responsibility, but there's an onus on you at the back to get the ball and start playing and play passing football. How are you finding that? Are you enjoying that under this manager? Because it seems certainly like the last, the Qatar match in particular, the team just, it looked like they were really enjoying themselves.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's obviously taking a bit of time. You know, the manager and the coaching staff are brilliant. They've come in with, you know, clear ideas. You know, the sessions are really good of, you know, what's expected from us in training and, you know, to take it into the game. And I think you can kind of see the last few months, every camp we've kind of improved and we've grown as a team. You know, the last camp was brilliant. Everything clicked. You know, we went away to Azerbaijan, which, you know, is a tough place to go. And to win 3-0 away from home was brilliant. And, you know, you could see the confidence we took from that game into the Qatar game, who, you know, Qatar aren't a bad side. And we just had a game plan and, you know, the lads executed the game plan perfectly. You know, we played some really, really good football.
Yeah.
And it's a testament to everyone, really, you know, the manager, the staff, and all the players, because, you know, everyone is dying to improve and to learn and to try win games. And, you know, we all know results, you know, is the main thing. And, you know, we want to be able to put in good performances and get results. And I think you can see us growing as a team.
No, I think that's fair. I think it's a long time since we saw those kind of performances in the most recent window. So look, fingers crossed obviously for Portugal tomorrow week and Luxembourg. One last one. I noticed, so obviously captaincy has come with Ireland, and you know, 2 years after your debut, the first time you were made captain of Ireland, you've done it plenty of times since obviously, and recently as well. You were made captain at Brentford as a player, captain at Sheffield United. Your manager was singing your praises, your new manager Jukanovic, as a player and as a captain recently. I don't know if you saw any of that, but he was talking you up in a huge way. What kind of captain are you? Why do you think maybe different managers are looking to you to be a captain? What do you try and bring to that role?
I don't know really. I just be me. I just, you know, try to lead by example. Really, try to just do my job as best as I can every day. You know, I try to train well and make sure my body, you know, is ready for the games. And, you know, when I play games, I try to do well and be consistent. I don't know really why, you know, obviously I've been captain at a few places now, but it's a responsibility that I like. And,
right,
you know, whether you have the armband or not, you know, it doesn't really change me. You know, I just go out and do my job every day and train, and every game I get to play, and just try to do it as well as I can.
Good man. Well, listen, you're doing something right. Best of luck next week, obviously. Everybody going to be watching. I hope it goes well. John Egan, great to have you on the show. Really appreciate it, John, your time. Thanks so much.
No worries. Thanks a million.
Cheers. John Egan there with us live on the line. And Football and Off the Ball is brought to you by Sky. Watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport. this season.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch every single live Premier League game on Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should there be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Welcome along. Champions League evening. Should let you know Liverpool 2-0 up against Atletico Madrid at Anfield. They've been really good in the first half, Liverpool. Atletico often don't start games very well, it must be said, and they haven't really this evening. A couple of inquests after both goals, Suarez gesturing to teammates as if to say, what is going on? The first, courtesy of Diogo Jota on 13 minutes. The second, Sadio Mane, brilliant all the way through. He took a throw-in on the left-hand side of the pitch and held off three Atletico players to open out the play, and it developed then the right-hand side. And Alexander-Arnold put in a brilliant cross for him, and you might not be shocked to hear Alexander-Arnold put in a brilliant cross for Diogo Jota as well. So both assists, courtesy of early first-time crosses from Alexander-Arnold. The kind of whipped-in balls you've seen before a million times from this guy. So that's where Liverpool are, 2-0 up at half-time in their group, 1-0 between Milan and Porto. PSG, I see, have just taken a lead in their game away to RB Leipzig. It was Wijnaldum who scored their first, and it was Wijnaldum who scored their second. Why is it always so disappointing when it's not Messi, Neymar?
That's what people like to do, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like Wijnaldum twice. Dan McDonald, hello.
Hi, Joe.
Messi not playing this evening, by the way, but Mbappe and Neymar are.
Unlikely to be him then. I mean, and yet you probably still look to see, just in case, to see.
Who knows?
Has he done something?
Real Madrid, by the way, 2-1 winners earlier on against Shakhtar. And Inter nil all against FC Sheriff in 50 minutes. Borussia Dortmund playing Ajax, 1-0 to Dortmund thus far. And Sporting Lisbon 3-0 up against Besiktas. We'll keep you updated accordingly. Daniel McDonald of the Irish Independent, hello.
Hi, Joe. That's the second hello.
We're going to get to Duffer in a second.
Okay.
Which is big news. It's great news. It's super for Irish football. Just to briefly mention for a moment. People keep saying he's the problem, screamed Rio Ferdinand in the BT studio. And I did think to myself, God, I've had that chat, haven't I? Possibly one of those people. And Ronaldo, as you knew he was going to do, would, and I think you used this very phrase, make you look foolish for thinking or saying that probably 15 times a season.
He's well on the way to that. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, I suppose not every goal he scores makes you look foolish, you know, for saying that. I mean, if it's a fourth goal and a 5-0 win, not foolish. If it's a goal and a 5-1 defeat where they've been, you know, outrun in other areas, probably not foolish. But when he keeps like doing amazing things in the last minute of a game, it certainly does tackle the problem issue. Now, like, it still can be true that someone's style is not suited to the style of a team collectively overall. But I mean, if he is winning games for them, or drawing games for them as it was last night, but still winning games as it was at the weekend with individual bits of brilliance, you can probably put up with some other stuff.
Yeah, like I agree with that point that not every goal he scores vindicates him, because this is a terrible analogy to use, actually, but it just popped into my head. It's a sign of the times we're living in. You know, the way we're measuring COVID deaths in part by comparison with the usual number of deaths in other given years. If you play up front for Manchester United, even you, Dan, across the course of a season, might nick one or two. You're going to score goals.
Maybe three.
Maybe. Put the man on penos.
Yeah.
So your presence would have put Bruno off as well, they say, just hovering. Macrint.
Well, it would have been like, what the hell is this fella doing here?
So there is a degree of
distraction.
There's going to be an inevitable number of goals. It's our Manchester United scoring more goals than they were without Ronaldo last year is a maybe better indicator. But that said, I mean, the goal against Spurs was outrageous. The goals against last night were outrageous. Manchester United, though, I know you caught the last maybe 10, 15 minutes. Across the 90 minutes, especially once Varane went off, they were a rabble. Mm. It was all-time low. So bad. I mean, the distances, the gaps between them all, you're talking, I'd say, 50 metres from defensive line to Ronaldo and no shape in between. Bruno popping up, taking throw-ins at right wing back. No organisation. It was all over the place. And there was a period from second half to about the hour mark where you thought Scott McTominay was going to get sent off. He was at war. He was lunging into tackles. He was getting involved in tussles. He was getting on the ball, in fairness to him. McTominay's better than people are saying. He may not be Manchester United better or quality, but he's a good player. But he was at war. He got one yellow and had a maybe two or three more yellow card offences, which the referee allowed. All the while, Pogba was just standing 10 metres next to him, just watching. Just not upping it, just not responding in a way that the great midfielders would, and digging him out and getting involved as well. And he had given the ball away atrociously, I don't know how many times in the first half. But what caught my eye was on BT, Paul Scholes, I think gave both the most withering assessment of Pogba and perhaps one of the more insightful assessments of Pogba. Because he is an enigma. He does great things and he does very well for France, and it's just hard to figure out. So Scholes on Pogba made the point that, look, I've played with him. You really understand someone when you've played with him. So he said, I don't think he's playing at the weekend. He's suspended. He said he wasn't great. He was sloppy. The quality today, severely lacking. Here's the point. Pogba, said Scholes, needs someone with experience with him, talking to him the entire time. He's 28 now. He's considered an experienced player. But when he's 35, he'll still be the same. He'll still be doing the same stupid stuff where he stood rolling the ball and showing how skillful he is, and people know it now. The biggest thing with Paul is concentration. He goes away with the fairy sometimes. He will need aggressive management on the pitch and off until he's 35 years of age.
Yeah.
And it kind of rang true, I thought.
Yeah, no, listen, that is a strong assessment. I suppose, I'm trying to think, when he has excelled with France, I mean, you kind of, I know it's a different environment, a different scenario. I'm trying to think who's around him on the pitch with France. I mean, it's Kante. He's more of a lead by example figure.
I had that same thought.
You know, like sort of would have been Matuidi at various times, or different. I'm probably forgetting a very obvious sort of French linchpin that might have been there. So, and obviously, listen, there'd be defenders and other players around them, I suppose, who have been directing. Yeah, who's there at the moment. But so I'm not sure I'd say that's 100%. Perfect, but as a theory, but I think it probably in a team where he doesn't necessarily have the most clearly defined role, you know, or a very sort of flexible role, or in a chopping and changing role, then you can certainly see the merit in that.
Yeah,
you know?
Like the fact that it's someone who's played with him and has a sense of him saying it.
But he was. Scholes had played for him when he was a kid. Like, Scholes hasn't played with him the last two or three years either.
But
you know,
he was militant about the point that, like,
he knows his style.
This is going to be the same when he's 35. I know this type of player. This is going to be the same when he's 35. I had the same thought as well. Well, you haven't played with him in a long time. He has gone and won a World Cup since you were with him. But Scholl said when he's 35, it will be the same. The point was made that at Juventus, where he played some of his best football as well, a lot of experience all around him in defence, in Pirlo, and he was talked through games and just kept plugged in.
Yeah, no, it's true. I suppose the language that you use about players when they're older, you know, you talk about them when they're 34, 35, you know, the wily veteran. I don't think we're ever going to be describing Paul Pogba maybe in those terms, you know, the sort of veteran schemer, you know, Pogba. Those words that you don't ever actually say out loud, but you write them.
Yeah.
You know? Not necessarily of that, more of a free spirit.
No, I think so.
Probably playing a guitar by then, or America. Probably America, actually.
How old is he? 28? He's a really experienced player, says Scholes, but he's one of them that will get to 35 and be exactly the same. And perfect moment for that ad to pop up. Oh, yes. He'll still be doing the stupid stuff where he stood rolling the ball, holding people off. Here's the Juventus quote. You think of the Juventus team he played in, where he was brilliant, and that was why we signed him. The experience around him, Pirlo, Chiellini, Bonucci, Buffon, an aggressive manager. He will need that treatment until he's 35.
Yeah, so I mean, it does go beyond just his midfield partners, I guess. Although
everyone around him.
Pirlo was a pretty good one, to be fair. And you'd imagine he'd be a talker to some degree.
Yeah. So it was extraordinary. And Jake Humphrey was definitely trying to get Scholes to repeat his viral moment of... And if they play like that on, say, against City, what would you...
What score? 3-1, 4-1.
And Scholes was like, well, look, I don't want to say it again, but yeah. Four or five.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it certainly tackles the Spurs representing a corner turned point, you know, if anyone did buy into that.
Let's talk Duffer, because this is very exciting news. He's taken over at Shelburne. In a moment, we have Owen Sheehan talking to Damien Duff. We'll play one or two other clips from a lively press conference as well. But just the news and what it means for Irish football and what it means for Shelburne and attendances and someone like Damien Duff involved in the game here. It's fantastic.
Yeah, like, I mean, we'll hear the clips in due course. I actually was thinking about this earlier, that the League of Ireland at the moment is, it's okay. You know, I heard you had Jimmy Byrne on the other day. Shamrock Rovers are good champions, probably haven't been pushed enough to be able to say they're great champions. It's not their fault. You know, Dundalk has been all over the shop this year. There's a couple of other clubs that I feel like they're going to be better in the coming year. I think St. Pat's under Stephen O'Donnell will be better. I feel Derry under Rory Higgins will be better. Yeah, it's, and to a degree, it's always low-key, League of Ireland. And in other ways, it's not. I feel like in recent years, you know, you've had Bows, sort of their movement growing, you know, and great attendances at games. And maybe sometimes you can have your own echo chamber in your sort of social media world. But crowds were up before the pandemic. But I feel like it's been very flat. But something that people would say about the league now is that maybe it's not like overflowing with massive characters. And it's not that. I think it's just that it's not in the nature of some of the most sort of really excellent coaches that are there at the moment.
Like, I'd bring back Roddy.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, and a lot of people would. People would hark back to the golden era of like Roddy and Pat Dolan and Dermot Keighley, in some cases just agreeing to manufacture a controversy in the week of the game. You know, it's like, and they had the like, I mean, Roddy still has his column with the Star, as does Pat Dolan. Dermot Keighley would have had one with the Sun, and he'd have people absolutely hammering each other in columns, you know, and but it would actually generate an interest. And like Stewie's famous, like, I'm angry quote, yeah. Which now that was just anger, like that was just that, that wasn't like contrived, that was just pure anger. But there was a lot more bite in it, and in recent years there is rivalries, you know. Rovers Bows is as good as ever, maybe even better than ever in some ways, but it's not necessarily the protagonists that are driving it.
Sure.
And now you have a genuine household name involved in the League of Ireland. He spoke today, we'll hear some clips, there'll be more stuff tomorrow. He would have spoken a bit about, say, you know, facilities in Ireland and stuff, and all of a sudden you're thinking this is actually a real spokesperson for the league. And not that he's going to be a spokesperson for the league in the sense of being a propaganda machine, he won't be. Like, this can go both ways. Like, if Damien Duff comes in and finds that he doesn't like it, he doesn't enjoy it, you know, he doesn't like aspects of, you know, how things are run, he'll be vocal about it, and that can go the other way.
Right, yeah.
But I think to have a recognisable voice, a potential voice for change, who can sort of speak impactfully about things that are wrong in the game in the country here, but he's seeing it from the inside, I think that can be very useful. And you have this sense that you know, you're forever sort of trying to sell it, and you have to get beyond that point. You need people to have that recognition of players or characters, and they just don't need, you know, to do their homework to know that Damien Duff is the Shells manager, you know. And I think it'll come across in these clips how when you hear him speak, you just think, yeah, this is Duffer. This is when you're known by nickname, by like people who've never met you, you know, you've hit a certain sort of household name status. And it does come across in some of the stuff we're going to hear, I think.
Well, we'll get the ball rolling with Owen Sheehan, who was chatting to Damien Duff after his press conference this afternoon.
I was here already. I've built good relationships up around the club. I like a lot of people. I like what the board are asking me to do, their vision for the club, and very, very simple. I'm here. I believe I'm ready, and I'm excited by the challenge.
So, what have you seen at the club so far that excites you about taking the senior role and the manager's job?
It's just a chance to rebuild, and that might sound strange after the team winning the first division. But I think what's gone on in the past, I think it's a sleeping giant. But you know, yo-yoing up and down from first division back to Prem. Whatever's gone on before at Shelburne for the past 10-15 years, I want to go the opposite way. So I believe it'll be exciting. Hopefully we'll win games. I know we'll lose games. But I think, listen, going forward this season, the most important thing is just to bring stability back to the club by staying up. They've had a wonderful season, they won the league, but next year they have to stay up.
To what extent is this an attractive job to you, because you've got a great dialogue with the people running the club, and that there is maybe a greater sense of autonomy as manager of this football club than maybe anything overseas in particular?
Yeah, well, listen, I'm not going away anytime soon anyway. I'm settled here with my wife and kids, so my football life is going to be in Ireland for the foreseeable future, for the next few years. I like the board's vision, I like what they say, they're hungry. Alan Caffrey, I know he has amazing drive. He wants to take the club to special places, and hopefully I can do that.
When it comes then to what you've seen with regards to the coaching in Ireland, first of all, the talent in this country, having worked at Rovers underage and having worked with Shells at underage, is it something that excites you? Is it something that's in a good place at the moment?
Absolutely. Even from going to games in recent weeks, listen, we know the quality Rovers have. I think Stephen's done an amazing job there, but you go down and watch any Pats games, there's a lot of youth in the team. Stephen O'Donnell's done a brilliant, brilliant job. The pace, the speed they play at, it's remarkable what he's done. So there's an awful lot of talent here. Granted, as I said before, do I know the league, the country, the players inside out? No, but day by day I'm getting there, and I'm encouraged by and excited by a lot of the players that I see.
You've already been speaking earlier on in the press conference about the morning training sessions. Can you explain to us why that's important, especially at a club who may not be fully professional?
I just think it goes hand in hand with an elite training environment. It also gives you the option to do a second session later on in the day. But I just think that's when you should train. If it's not rocket science, you go anywhere around the world. Yes, there might be the odd evening, afternoon session put in, but I think afternoons here encourages lads maybe to stay up late and not prepare, maybe have the odd shandy or two. So listen, that's my plan. It's not signed off on, because I realise guys here have jobs, they need to pay bills, because let's be honest, we're not going to become rich whether it be a coach or playing here. So I know lads have to double jobs, so but in my mind that's where football should be at.
How much do players respond positively to that, your insistence on the highest of standards, pushing them to their limits?
We'll soon see, but I guess it's the way you deliver it. I think a strength of mine is building relationships and connecting with people, and getting good people in the changing room, obviously on the staff as well, just that buy-in from everyone. For me, it just all starts with standards. You can talk about coaching and ability and players, but it's all pointless if your standards aren't sky high. So that's what we'll be trying to instill in everyone on and off the club from day one.
Having been here for the last couple of years, how do you feel the League of Ireland is going in general and Irish football at grassroots level?
It's exciting stuff. Even going to the semi, Pat's Dundalk a couple of weeks ago, brilliant atmosphere. It was electric, to be fair. So it was great even to go to that game. Some amazing quality on view. So like I said, some top players in the league. The grassroots obviously being involved with that, the new League of Ireland structure. So there's some top quality games, just probably not enough. Whether they start seeding academies, I don't know. But listen, that's not for me. That's not for me to say.
Damien Duff there speaking to Owen Sheen. I was just saying to you, Jernet, why is Duffer so likable?
Yeah, but it's everyone remembers.
So you just feel like, I'd love to be mates with that lad.
But he's always, when you think about it, like the first time I still remember Damien Duff is the Malaysian Marvels, Brian Kerr's team, was it 97, 98? And even then, you hear these stories, maybe subsequent, maybe not at the time, but the team talk was almost like, Kerr giving everyone instructions and then saying, Duffer, you do your thing, and he sort of played with this sort of real, like I would always say about Damien Duff that he's not the best player to have ever played for Ireland, but I think he's probably the most exciting to have played for Ireland, in the sense that when he was in his pomp around, probably to be fair, around the World Cup in 2002, that sort of up off your seat thing. And really, like, so there's a certain affection that's born from that, but there's a sense that really over the years, like, didn't like doing the media, but he's brilliant when he speaks.
Yeah.
Didn't want to do coaching, but then you hear he's absolutely obsessively mad about it, and just really sort of unfiltered, There's nothing
very straight.
There's
talking.
Nothing. There's no. There's clearly the odd line he throws out that he's probably thought about. It's not all that, natural. I would say at times he knows the power of his voice, but there is a sense of. I didn't want to be famous, but it just so happened that I'm brilliant at this thing. And like, you hear the stories of him. I mean, what was that? I think it was a Sunday Times interview years back. The story about Damien Duff when he retired, still renting an AstroTurf pitch by his own.
It's so poignant.
To go up and just practice his skills. Just
to kick
and stuff,
a football.
Yeah. But I've spoken to people who've worked with him in his underage teams in recent years, and I mean, just the excitement around where this might go as such is palpable. Because they know he's got a real intense way about him.
Well, just on that point, because Owen asked him about the morning session, so I guess that came up in the press conference. Is he talking about a 10 a.m. morning training session, or is he talking about getting the Shells lads up for a 6 a.m.
session? No. Not like the Dubs or something, like training behind edges or whatever. We can't even talk about that. But no, it's more training full-time in the morning, like a professional club.
Okay, work allowing for those guys.
Oh, well, yeah, but I think it's a weird one at the moment in Ireland, because there's most clubs are now training in the morning and are effectively full-time, but there'd be a handful of players who maybe do other stuff outside the game later in the day, and Shells are just going to have to maybe adapt to that environment. I don't see, with the demands he has, I thought it was a significant line in there with Owen's thing actually about there'll be room for a double session. Like, I don't think there's going to be too many Shells players, in my opinion anyway, doing a huge amount outside of the game. I'd say it'll be, you know, maybe spinning towards younger players or people in education and stuff like that, I would have thought. You know,
I don't think body fat percentages will be low.
I don't think there's going to be a part-time feel about them, no.
Let's bring you a clip or two from his press conference then. So he was asked, obvious enough question here to get the ball rolling, why he decided to take the job.
Obviously, after coming back home after Celtic, Tony, getting involved with the Irish gig, but I just want to be on the grass every day to keep improving as a coach, keep learning, keep trying new things. And they're probably the only club that welcomed me with open arms. They've let me get on with my thing for 18 months and... yeah, so I'm there, I've enjoyed it. It's probably not great that there's traffic back in the M50. It was great during COVID, I'd be there in 20 minutes. But otherwise, they've looked after me from day one. And listen, they've asked me last week, a lot of soul searching, probably I was humming and hawing. It's obviously in the media already that I said no on Friday. But I think over the weekend, after speaking to Alan Dock and Andrew Doyle, they wanted me to reconsider. And it was just soul searching with me. Where do I want to go with my life? Probably midlife crisis. You know, people have been telling me, you know, you need to start coming up with a plan. I'm obviously back home 18 months and I didn't have a plan. Absolutely didn't. All I know is I love football. I love coaching. I love helping and improving players. So similar to when I said, I think on RT that I'd be unhappy with myself if I stayed. With this, I'd be unhappy with myself if I said no and turned it down. And it's as simple as that.
So off the back of that answer, Damien Duff was asked why initially he had said no when Shells offered him the job.
Why did I say no? Probably because I was in the south of France drinking red wine. I was on my holidays. Listen, there was two reasons. One, I like to be able to... I like my life. I like to go away with the kids and, you know, just have my own time. So that was one. And secondly was... you know, it's totally out of comfort zone stuff. And am I scared? Absolutely, yeah. Do I feel uncomfortable? Absolutely. But I've been preaching to kids since day one, my own two kids, 15s at Rovers, 17s at Shells, about showing personality, about showing courage, which they can lack at times. And for me to say no on Friday, I was lacking courage, I was lacking personality. So over the weekend, as I said, I didn't have to speak to anyone. Of course, the board told me to ask me to reconsider, and I did, and that was just soul-searching. That's why I said no, for them two reasons alone. Like me holidays, and I was fearful of what I was getting into. But like I said, I can't preach to kids or coach the kids, whether it be men, women, or child, and then turn it down. So that's why I'm here.
So... another question then for Damien Duff, now Shelburne manager. He was asked about his coaching style, about his philosophy, about his makeup and what he's bringing to the party. Where does he get that from?
Well, listen, I've taken it from him everywhere. You know, my first session with Shelburne first team, I'll be probably using bits from Jose Mourinho from 20 years ago. So for, you know, being involved with the FAI for 8 games, yes, I'll take bits, what's right, what's wrong. But you take that from everywhere, whether it be Celtic, Roy Hodgson, Giovanni Trapattoni, Jose Mourinho. I've taken everything. And then it's just putting you, I guess, your own stamp on things. I'll never change. I'm, like I said, energetic, emotional, so the players will soon learn that. I don't try and be anything I'm not. I realise we all have egos, but I don't think I have a particularly big one. I think if I did, I wouldn't be here today. So I want to be involved with Irish football. I want to help young and old, men and women. I'm not going anywhere anytime soon because my kids are happy here, my wife is here. So Ireland stuck with me.
He can list off some managers.
It's not a bad CV of, or sort of a references he could go for. You know, and I suppose that brings authority straight away, as you sort of mentioned, like peak Mourinho, like he got really good Mourinho at his best, you know. And
lads, I know you don't like this drill, but we did this at Chelsea with Jose when we won the league.
Yeah, and that certainly helps, you know. So I think it, you know, his personality probably comes across there. I think we had a bit, played a small bit in the news right now.
Oh, it's coming again.
Oh, it's coming.
Will I just go to it?
Yeah, I'd go for it.
Okay,
yeah.
So look, he saw this question coming. And to put the question a bit more unfairly than I'm sure it was asked, you know, Duffer, you tend to jump around a bit. I mean, are you going to even be here in 6 months' time?
I knew I'd be asked this question, but I don't know how you prove longevity or commitment to a club. You know, I was at Shamrock Rovers as a player, obviously, and then as a coach for 18 months. I dedicate my life for 18 months to kids at Shamrock Rovers. It's never mentioned. I got stick for, you know, training at 6 o'clock in the morning and then bring them back out at 6 o'clock at night. I'd like to think they were the best days of them boys' careers so far today. I probably saw them kids more than I did my own kids, so dedicate my life to them. But I can't prove longevity by saying no to Celtic then. So if Celtic come and ask me to come and leave Shamrock Rovers 15s, everybody in the room would say yes. So I went to Celtic. Had an amazing time at Celtic. If I go back there tomorrow, I'll be welcomed back with open arms. Built amazing, amazing relationships with some special people. But when your wife and your kids are back home and your son and your daughter are asking, Daddy, forget about 8, 9 and 10. We just want you home. You come home, just like everybody else in this room. So I came home. I went to the Irish coaching gig, obviously. And again, as I touched at the start, I would have been unhappy with myself, so I'm not going to get into that today. But I'd like to think again, everybody in this room would have left the gig, which is what I did. But everywhere I've been, I'm now with Shell 17s and now the first team, I've dedicated my life to them. So longevity or impatient or always jumping ship, I actually don't when you strip it back and look at the ins and outs and the reasons. I'm incredibly dedicated. I dedicate my life to players. I'm still in touch with Celtic players. I'm still in touch with Shamrock Rovers under 15s players for help, for guidance, on and off the pitch. I tell my Shelburne 17 players that now, on and off the pitch, I'm here till the day I die, till the day they die. If I bump into the street in 20 years' time, and it's going to be exactly the same with senior players, whoever they are next year. So I knew it would be asked, but I think it needed to be addressed because to say I jump here, there, and I'm not. When I'm with players, they get the whole of Damien Duff. I give my life to them.
Well, I think that answers that. So I guess one last question before we take a short break. They're in the Premier Division, obviously, next year. What has he got to work with? What are their chances of survival next year? Or are their ambitions higher than survival next
year? Well, I think he has a blank enough canvas, really, that, I mean, he can decide whether to retain a lot of the players that are there.
Would he have money to spend?
It seems that their budget might be something in the region of 12,000 to 13,000 euros per week, which would be mid-range. But their suggestion is that, you know, they might have a bit more investment coming in. I'm sure, you know, there'll be a bit more interest now. And does that allow you? I mean, Shells in recent years, it must be mentioned, like, they haven't just, say, appointed Duff and this is their thing. Like, they've been making big moves in recent years to try and have a sort of a rebirth. I mean, earlier this year, they hired Alan Caffrey from St. Kevin's Boys, who would have, you know, the top schoolboy nursery in the country. They hired him to be their sporting and technical director to oversee their section. They're taking their women's team very seriously. Noel King was hired there. And the whole club was undergoing a bit of a rebrand. I mean, Duff was already there in the under-17s as it was. So there was a bit of chat over the last year or so that if Shells got promoted, they would be given it a crack. You know, like last year they were relegated, and the feeling was if they weren't relegated, they were going to go full time this year in the Premier Division if they'd stayed up. So I think what's going to be interesting is what sort of attraction is working with Duff to players, because there'll be a lot of other clubs with similar budgets probably competing for similar type players, and you just wonder, is the opportunity to work with Duff, to work with maybe Joey O'Brien if he's hired as a number two, and to be part of something that's growing potentially, will that be attractive? So I think at the moment, as I said, like there's good league winners, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility that a team that clicks and gets into gear could do well What doing well represents, we'll find out, but it's going to be fun to watch it either way.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, very good. Football on OTB is brought to you by Sky. You can watch every Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season. Liverpool still 2-0 up against Atletico, 15 minutes to go. Man City are now 3-1 up against Bruges again, 15 minutes to go.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season.
You're very welcome back. So I'll just give you scores for Man City in the Champions League this evening. 3-1 up now against Club Brugge. It was Phil Foden playing in the false nine role this evening on 15 minutes, who scored their first. Mahrez, their second. And Sterling, just in the last few moments, has scored their third. So Man City cruising 3-1 up this evening. They will be at Old Trafford 12:30 on Saturday. PSG, courtesy of two Wijnaldum goals, still 2-1 up away to Leipzig. As for Liverpool's group, Group B, 1-1 between Milan and Porto, and as things stand at Anfield with about 10 minutes to go, Liverpool 2, Atletico Madrid 0. And to that end, Republic of Ireland international Louise Quinn is with us on the line. Hey Louise.
Hey Joe, hey Dan, how's things?
Yeah, great. Yeah. We're putting you in the pundit's chair this evening, so we've been keeping an eye on this game. I saw a bit of the first half. Can we start with Trent Alexander-Arnold's right boot, maybe?
Yeah, ridiculous. Just exactly what he does, puts amazing balls into the box, and for him it was a great ball in for Jota to get a little kind of tap in header, but you know, he put it right in that the corridor of uncertainty, to be honest, you know, right where the goalkeeper doesn't want to come, the defenders find it hard to, you know, to run backwards, and you know, there is that risk of, you know, yeah, tap it into their own net, to be honest. But it was, you know, absolutely, you know, in the first 7 minutes, what a ball. Easy goal for Jota then in the end, and then yeah, pretty much same for the, or almost same for the second goal. But I would say he was actually, you know, so for Mane's goal, he was probably taking a shot, but again, nice for him. It was a good strike on trying to put it across the goalkeeper, but then Mane again was just there to run onto it. You know, it was probably pulling wide, but just again, he was just, he's just been phenomenal again down that right hand side, even just sometimes creeping in, obviously they were kind of saying even to like the Jordan Henderson position to kind of whip that ball in. And yeah, and he's just been, you know, incredibly strong all game, you know, and again, defensively, there was obviously a lot of questions asked to him, you know, last year about how he is defensively. And, you know, he's been, again, he's been just on everything, to be honest.
I'd be curious for your reading of the situation as a defender, because for the first goal, the cross in for Jota, Alexander-Arnold whips it in first time, and the way the ball was played back to him, it didn't look like the easiest of angles, and it looked like two of the Atletico defenders started to step out, almost like, let's try and push up a little bit, and they were almost taken a bit by surprise that he whipped it in first time.
Yeah, to be honest, I think, so it was Jordan Henderson who set it back to him, but it was just the perfect pace. It wasn't something where he had to take a touch on it. And, you know, they even showed in the analysis before, when Jordan Henderson had the ball, straight away, Alexander-Arnold checks the shoulder, looks into the box, then just about gets the ball. And then again, that little look into the box before he was just about to play it in. And it was just perfect. You know, it was. And the defenders were starting to step up, which I suppose it's almost that kind of rule for defenders. As soon as you kind of see the ball being played backwards, you try to take those extra couple of yards to shorten the spaces. But Alexander-Arnold just saw, as I said, the corridor, you know, we like to call it, and it's such a horrible one for a goalkeeper and defenders to try to do anything about, and then it's just easy for the strikers to run onto.
So 2-0 overall, what about Liverpool's performance generally, or the game generally?
Yeah, really, it honestly could be 6-0, I'd say.
Right.
This second half, straight away, Jota had a goal that was disallowed. Jota missed a bit of a sitter. You know, they've just had, you know, chances where they really could have put it away. And Atletico even had a goal disallowed as well, which could have really just put the pressure on, you know, just from, they had an offside position. But Atletico themselves are down to 10 men. You know, the first half was wild, to be honest. The intensity of the game, Liverpool are playing phenomenal. We know that Atletico Madrid are incredibly good defensively and pressing the ball, but Liverpool have just been, you know, one step ahead of them the whole time. You know, and to it was then just a crazy challenge by one of the central defenders, you know, on a recovery back. And he did just really kind of slip his studs down the back of Mane's Achilles. And essentially that was it. And, you know, it was kind of like, right, it was obviously 70 yards away from goal, definitely a yellow. And then so was Felipe. He just decided to keep ignoring the referee. It was actually bizarre. The referee blew the whistle like three times and tried to call him back. And Felipe just went down, started fixing his socks, didn't do anything, didn't really look at the ref, maybe gave him a bit of a thumbs up from about 40 yards away. Mm. And so the ref just sent him off. And it's one of those where it's just been, you know, it's been hectic. Mane got a yellow, so they took him off naturally at halftime, just to kind of save themselves there, because it's, you know, it's been a really fiery game. But, you know, it's been, Liverpool have just been on top. But they're going to be disappointed not putting away the chances and still making it, you know, a little bit tighter than it should be.
Yeah. I've just as you were talking here and paying closer attention, Salah's done about 8 brilliant things on the right-hand side. So he's been lively, I suspect, for most of the game.
Yeah, he's actually just done it again in the box. There's just been a couple of times as well. He's obviously been so on form, and the goals against City and, Brighton and stuff like that, where he's just been incredible at getting into the box. But there's times where he should have just released the ball. But again, he's just full of confidence. You know, he may as well just kind of go for it. But, you know, again, there's been, you know, so many players that could have scored a lot of goals now to really put it away. But you can see that Salah, he's desperate at the moment. But that's kind of how obviously Liverpool want him to be, and eager to get the goals all the time.
Mm. Who do you think is going to win the league, by the way?
Ooh, good. Like, I really think obviously Liverpool are definitely pushing it in the form that they're in. But obviously Chelsea are really pushing. But I don't know. I just feel Chelsea could be slightly more vulnerable at the moment, just with a few more injuries, like a couple of injuries that they've had to Lukaku and the likes. But I think obviously how Tuchel, his tactics to go win a game are incredible. Mm. But again, if they kind of keep this intensity, it's going to be neck and neck, really. But obviously, I'm going to go for Liverpool, though.
Oh, you're a Liverpool fan, are you?
I'm a Liverpool fan.
Oh, I didn't know that. I wouldn't have asked that.
Yeah, all my life, yeah.
Let's talk Ireland. Helsinki, that's a really big night for this team, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was. It was almost just one of those where I just think at the end of the game, I was just like, we just deserved it. It was obviously absolute backs to the wall. I think Liverpool have another disallowed goal there. But in the Finland game, you know, backs to the wall for the last, what felt like about an hour, but was, you know, 10 to 15 minutes of where we really had to defend incredibly strong. And kind of take on that pressure. I suppose not that we definitely did kind of sit off a bit, maybe a little bit too much, but again, it was just down to a little formation change to try and, you know, stop them, what they were doing. And, you know, for me, they were looking for some of those longer balls. I thought Neve and Savannah again did incredibly well. They were kind of playing those balls to kind of the slightly wider centre backs and their centre forwards to look for a knockdown. And, you know, everyone was just reading it and following their players and bodies on the line. Jamie Finn almost got her head chopped off. And then Heather Payne was just phenomenal. She did a tackle on the edge of the box. That just gave us that boost of energy. And again, it was nervy, but I didn't feel like they were going to score. Everyone was putting everything out there. And it was kind of just one of those, do you know what? We deserve that. We needed this. We played for that, you know. Even just again, I feel like it's just been lots of little bits of where we're unlucky, and felt like obviously with such a positive performance against Sweden, obviously the excellent performance against Australia, that was, for us, it was massive, and we just took advantage of it.
Yeah, I did. I think, Louise, it was interesting. I was reading some of the comments afterwards from, I think, yourself and I think Katie the night of the game, and the senior players, that it seems like you're sort of not torn between, but there's a sense of it, there's natural excitement that you've landed that win, but also just trying to caution people about it is only just one game. But like, how do you feel about November now, these games that it just feels like there's going to be probably more pressure? Even I know there was pressure towards the end of the last campaign, but it sort of feels even now, this one, in terms of awareness, has exploded even more so, that there's going to be a real proper scrutiny around these games now. And do you sort of embrace it? Do you tell the younger players to enjoy it? Or is there a certain sense of, okay, this is a certain apprehension about what's coming down the tracks here, that this is all of a sudden, I mean, this is going to be a real potential life changer for some of these players?
Yeah, I suppose it is. It is a certain amount of pressure, but this sort of pressure is definitely privilege. You know, to kind of be able to see that there's an opportunity for us to qualify for a World Cup, and again, obviously there was a bit of that scrutiny of a lot of the previous games that we had played, and you know, against bigger teams, not getting the wins, but those games were pressure games in themselves, you know, or just that change of mindset that, okay, when we play in these bigger games against bigger teams, how can we do about it? Like, what can we do about it? And how can we handle the pressure? So I don't know, there really is, like, obviously since even at the start of the Australia game, we hadn't even played it yet, there was just this air of confidence and excitement, and everyone just feeling comfortable and good, like, you know, how things are going and the position that everyone is in, you know, either club-wise or just kind of, yeah, just how we've developed. And it's just kind of gone on from there. So, yeah, these are big games, but for us, two home games against teams where, yeah, hopefully we can put performance in, but we've seen Slovakia, you know, are putting in a really strong campaign as well. And obviously, just even as we were going through clips of the likes of Finland as well and Sweden, like, you know, we saw bits of Georgia at the same time. And again, it's not a team that we can just be like, yeah, that's going to be a 3 points in the bag. Absolutely not. But every game, it's just every international game is the biggest game of your life, to be honest. Mm. You know, that's how I kind of feel about it. It's, you only get together for such a short time, and it's an honour. So for me, it's they're always the biggest games, putting on the Irish jersey and playing. So, but we just have this kind of, yeah, this confidence now that it's going around kind of each player. And then I think it's just to add that little extra bit of belief, to be honest, like as in when we get to kind of in the final third and, you know, in our individual ability kind of with the ball. Because again, we knew we should have done better with that in Finland, even though we felt very in control, just some decisions on the ball. And it's actually just that bit of belief that actually some teams may not be able to put it up against us. And we really felt that in the first half with Finland. But then we've got to be like, yeah, okay, we can take control of this.
Mm. There's definitely, I don't know how true it is, I get a sense of this team, largely maybe because of the disappointment of the last campaign where you started so well and it faded away, and I'm sure that was kind of a painful watch then, watching the championships happening without your involvement. No one's getting too far ahead of themselves here. I get the sense of, right, we're not letting this one slip again, and there's a sense of focus and team on a mission. I just get that vibe.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a really long, you know, long campaign, and still obviously have Sweden away and Finland at home then, you know, later on in the year. But again, for us, it's, yeah, just not letting the opportunity slip away. And at the end of the day, if a team is better than us on the pitch on the day, then that's football and that's sport. But if we can put everything forward and just kind of, yeah, not, you know, again, in that Ukraine game, If they had beaten us for the right reasons, you can take that.
Yes.
But you know, it wasn't that way. We were disappointed in ourselves and having fear going into a game. You know, so I feel like we've shrugged a lot of that off the shoulders. There's not many worse feelings that kind of happened in that game. So you know, now the rest is just like, you know what? Let's take the pressure, take it on, do our best. You know, enjoy it. You know, just the players have been just taking so much responsibility themselves as well. You know, really seeing kind of so many individuals just kind of like step it up another gear. And that's you know, what you want and what's going to make us grow and make hopefully this campaign, you know, a successful one.
Yeah, well, look, fingers crossed, everyone's watching. So thanks so much for doing the punditry role for us this evening, Louise Quinn. Cheers.
No worries, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Emil. Louise Quinn there. Liverpool still 2-0 up with 30 seconds to go at Anfield.
Football on off the ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, EFL, Scottish Premiership and much more. Live on Sky Sports.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-fits-all branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.